Morning, everybody. I'd like to say that Dave's going to talk briefly on developing a nested series of war games. Hopefully it's going to work out like that, but let's see how it goes. This is a bit of a team effort that's basically collapsed down to a team of one. So as you can see, most of the guilty parties listed on the screen there, but only one of them got to stand up and get shot at the end. So thank you very much, Jeff, and everybody else. Just to set a bit of context as to the background of the scenario we were looking at. Some recent headlines, taken from about the last, 12 to 18 months. Most of these headlines actually could have come straight out of the Matrix game, which was the initiating event or the initiating activity in our nesting. But really, the genesis of the project was the final session at Connections last year. Discussion from DCDC on areas where wargaming could be of use to them, and therefore were there any scenarios, any parts of the world, any strategic considerations which they would appreciate wargaming having a look at. The High North was pretty high on that list of areas of concern, and looked to us to be quite a natural area to investigate. So the project here was looking at developing a multi-layered family of war games. So looking at how a political strategic level game could then link into an operational level game, and then that would feed down to the tactical level. And as we've found, there's feedback within that, so you can feed from one, not only feeding down, but then feeding back as well. But we'll go into that in a bit more detail. This isn't the first, obviously, this isn't the first case of people trying to do this. US Naval War College obviously tried this, and is well known for that. Hobby gamers have been doing it for years. I'm sure quite a large number of people in the room, or certainly some people in the room, have played strategic operational level games like Kingmaker, and then used that as a setting for more tactical level games. But in this case, we were looking at trying to bring three levels together, which is not something that you come across all that frequently. So, project A, to identify the risks and difficulties of linking these multi-level games together. What works, what doesn't work, and what opportunities arise from this approach. It's worth noting that we were pretty much left to our own devices in terms of how we approach this and what the outcomes would be. We didn't have a specific research question, and so that maybe didn't give us quite the degree of rigor that we would do if this was also funding, if we were looking at this as a formal project. So the games, what do we choose to link together? So it was essential these had to be pre-existing games, because as I said, there was no funding for this. This is an entirely voluntary project put together by people in academia, Ministry of Defence and others, but there is no money associated with doing this. So, and also this is a very short flash to bang project, so there was really no time to develop anything new. So the three game systems that we selected were at the strategic political level. So it was a Matrix game, which was very ably facilitated by Tom. I think he had an awful lot of fun running that. The operational level game, we used RCAT, everybody's favourite, with Jeremy and Graham running that. And then at the tactical level, UCL's ASEW game, developed by Dr. Nick Rambier and Matt Warwood, which we'll talk about later. So linking it back to the Modern War Games Handbook, I must stress that this is a work in progress. So we've been working through project design phase and now we're moving into development. If we take this forward, we're into developing. Execution, well, we haven't got a formal execution yet. There may well be a requirement to do so, but at that stage we are very much work in progress. So, just to briefly run through the games played so far. Matrix game, conducted at Shrivenham in May with Tom presiding. Quite a number of the protagonists of that game are in the room. We'll probably remember it with some amusement as the forces of right and good in the form of Norway, the United Kingdom, Canada, the United States, are basically run ragged by the Chinese, the Russians, and the enlightened forces of capitalism as they completely wrong-footed us and basically set their own agenda. There was a very strong feeling, certainly in some quarters at the beginning of the game, that Svalbard would be the focus for this, that kinetic action would arise from some crisis over Svalbard. And indeed, that wasn't the case, as the Chinese and the Russians decided they were far more interested in trying to force an independence vote in Greenland. And that kind of derailed certainly the Western side's thoughts on where things are going. But also, it ended up in a situation where, actually, at the conclusion, we hadn't come up with a credible scenario where a kinetic outcome would arise from activities in the Arctic. That led to a little bit of scrabbling around afterwards, thinking about, okay, so how do we now go to the next stage? And this comes into something I'll talk about a little bit later in terms of credibilities of scenarios. Suffice to say at this point that we came to the conclusion that contagion, a crisis elsewhere in the world, would lead to some sort of activity in the Arctic, either as a distraction from whatever those other activities were, or as a byproduct with forces unknown taking advantage of the confusion elsewhere to sow discord up in the Arctic. The ArcCat game actually took place last month. So this used, as I said, a contagion scenario, so a Baltic scenario. So those of you who were here yesterday are familiar with that. So it assumed that a crisis was ongoing in the Baltic, and the Russians decided to take advantage of this by securing the sea lines of communication through both routes through the High North. We're going to secure this by seizing Svalbard. This was an interesting scenario for us to look at for a number of reasons. One of the things we wanted to explore, or have the ability to explore, is looking at the impact of high latitude on naval operations. So, things which aren't normally a factor in naval operations in more temperate climates, the effect of razzing on carrier operations. So at certain temperatures, your upper deck crews and your RAS gear starts to stop working. So you can't push your aircraft carriers as far north as you'd like to, so that limits the ability of you to deploy those, and therefore that limits your ability to influence operations in those parts of the world. Effects of poor weather, zero visibility, cold weather effects on upper deck crews. Again, your RAS gear doesn't work, but neither do your crews. They don't want to be standing outside when it's minus 20. But then, of course, that has an impact on Red Force as well, because they don't want to be operating outside when it's minus 20, but maybe they're better trained at it. Interesting things came out of that. Critical role of submarines and special forces is pretty much obvious. But we were, as the critical thinker and observer, was quite amused to see the creative use of SSBNs as tripwires. So the NATO players thinking, well, if we come across a submarine, we'll sink it, because obviously it's a submarine. And then, hang on, it's an SSBN, it's a strategic asset, why is it here? Because the Russians wanted NATO to sink it, because that would just up the ante, and of course, the Russians would be the good guys in that situation. And also emphasise the one shot and use it or lose it nature of warfare, naval warfare. So task forces with large numbers of missiles, but realising that the only way you were going to get through a layered defence was to use all those missiles in one go. And these naval task groups suddenly became kind of one-shot weapons. It's quite an interesting bolstering of something that we were already fairly aware of. Tom will be amused at the large number of tracks on the map on the map board there. Came in for a certain or quite a high degree of comment afterwards. At the tactical level, the rules that we were looking at using there were ASCW, which is Dr. Nick Bradbeer's excellent set of rules, which you'll be demonstrating in the games fair, and which he briefed at Connections last year. ASCW is intended as a training aid for young engineers on the UCL MSc course in ship design, and also we're looking at developing that into DNS and the Submarine Delivery Agency in terms of training young engineers there as well. It is but one of many tactical level naval rules, you could substitute harpoon or something else in there if you wanted to, but this was one that we had available. And the intention there was to be able to take scenarios, to vignettes, actual engagements and things which came out through the ARCAD engagements, and then to model those in ASCW. So for example, there was a US-Russian missile exchange as two surface action groups got within range and exchanged large numbers of missiles for varying degrees of effect. So, what have we identified? What came out of this activity? So, staying focused, I think, was one of our big lessons. So it says there, compelling nature of gameplay and the subconscious desire to elicit real-world insights distracted from the aim. So people tended to get focused on particular things which, whilst they were very interesting, weren't necessarily aiming to, or weren't necessarily contributing to delivering the aim of the game. In those terms, probably the most important things we had were game controllers, like Graham and others, who would then draw the game back to where we needed to be. So that's a very interesting aspect, but let's go back and remind ourselves what it is that we're trying to do. And actually, I was saying in certain circumstances that was self-moderated, as some of the players themselves identified that we were going down rabbit holes and brought things back on course. And also a critical thinker, somebody who's sitting there observing, throwing in subject matter expertise and their sort of real world experience to really say, well, is that a credible course of action? Is that sensible? Is that realistic? Or also, here are some aspects that you haven't thought of. So task groups, merrily creaming through, first year ice at 25 knots or so. Well, no, that doesn't happen. You're going to be going considerably slower than that. Or so what are the effects of operating submarines under ice in this particular part of the world? If players didn't have that experience, then the critical thinker was there to maybe sort of inject a little bit of realism when it was needed. Flow down factors. So first game throws up some factors that the second game doesn't model. But what do you do in those situations? Well, then you need to be able to very quickly develop mitigations for that. So redesigning the game, coming up with new rules on the fly, that kind of thing, and that's where your specialists and your critical thinkers probably come into their own if you need to develop these things quickly. So does the scenario skew the analysis? So there may well be some factors which are overemphasized in your scenario. It's been mentioned a couple of times in some of the previous presentations. Yeah, so again, your critical thinking, your game controller are there to bring you back on track. And also the structure of the game. If the game itself focuses on particular aspects, if the game models particular aspects very well, it will model those very well. There are other things that, if they're not there, then your support team, your critical thinkers and controllers are there to really fill in those gaps as and when they arrive. So I think we concluded, probably confirmed, that your game controller and your critical thinkers are essential. Steering the game, filling in those gaps, providing that realistic overlay. So that was critical, I think, to the execution of this project. Adjudication methods, we looked at what were the most appropriate adjudication methods for those three levels. I'll let you to read those there in the interest of time. And scenario plausibility. I said that when we got to the end of the Matrix game, we hadn't found a good reason for countries to go to war in the Arctic based on that. So there was quite a long session afterwards thinking, well, okay, how do we start to get people flinging missiles around? And some of the scenarios which we came up with, whilst sounding vaguely credible, were pretty implausible. And so that really got us onto thinking that if you are going to engage in your lower level games or any kind of game, you need a realistic scenario, something which is plausible, because otherwise the players are sitting there whilst they're playing through the scenario thinking, yeah, this is great, but it would never really happen, would it? And so that damages the credibility of your downstream activities. We looked very briefly, some area of potential extra study, looking at validation, or is it verification? Not quite sure which of the two it is. Between game systems. So we're looking at RCAP generating scenarios which we flow down into ASCW, but can we use ASCW to generate the stats to actually work in RCAP? Again, you can read this later, but it's an area of some interest, which Dr. Nick and some of the rest of us will be looking at in due course. And just a few observations which did come out of this. We weren't specifically going into this to generate these, it was more an exercise in linking the games. But a few interesting things did come out. So looking at the deployment of ice stations. Ice Station Zebra is probably one which sits best in people's minds, but with a permanent or a semi-permanent ice shelf, so how can you use that to set up surface-to-air missile batteries to provide additional cover? How vulnerable is Svalbard to a rapid a coup de main? How quickly can NATO react to that? But the interesting one at the bottom, reinforced as it came out of the Matrix game, is there really a reason for countries to go to war specifically in that region, arising from that region? Probably not. So to conclude, then we demonstrated an initial nesting of strategic, political, operational and tactical level games. We've identified a number of lessons in terms of the feasibility of doing that, perils and pitfalls, things which worked, things which didn't. We have a project which is moving from design into development. If anybody chooses to sponsor that development, or if we decide to continue with it. And I think from a personal perspective, it's been a fascinating learning experience, I think, for everybody, which has served us all well. So on that, I will conclude.
And finally, Volko is going to talk to us.